What is happening? Welcome to The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today is joined. Nick Pollock is here with Enosaurus. Hi. What's up, Eno? Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. We're all grown up. 15.
Oh, man. That's right. This is even like 50% more than just a normal podcast now. Oh, my gosh.
We can get a learner's permit.
It is actually, I think, next week. Oh, man. We're going to record my birthday next week. I don't want to say that out loud. But it's so good to see you. We've had another week of baseball. What do you know? Shocking. Did you put out your rankings yet? Or are you putting them out?
I had them last week.
You did. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to be perusing that a little bit. It might be a fun way for us to just kind of see like, okay, this is a big gap between us, but we saw some debuts. We saw Robert Gasser, which I think is the one that everyone is talking about from over this weekend, not someone else. He was an interesting guy in my view, but I do want to hear your take on Gasser, but there are some interesting things about Skeens actually that I had some thoughts and I really wanted to hear, your opinion on it. But first and foremost, what's that? A comp?
Did you hear our comp on race?
What's your comp? Oh,
righty, no. Chris Sahil.
Oh, well, he looks like it.
Yeah. The release point and the fastball are like really, really similar.
Yeah, someone flipped it. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it. I thought we came up with it, but I don't know what the timing was. I don't care.
Well, they didn't say Chris Sale.
When we saw that, we were like, no. And then we put the video like next to each other and we're like, whoa. Because like when you see Chris Sale, you think like herky jerky and you think like sidearm and you think skinny, and then you see Paul Skeens and you're like beefy, and
right.
But the arm slots are remarkably similar, actually.
That's so
interesting. It's a 3-inch difference.
Wow. Well, that's fascinating. And
he throws a big kind of a sweepy slider, right?
Well, he does. He absolutely does that.
Yeah. And then they both throw kind of a splitter finger thingy.
Oh, really? Chris Sale is more of a split finger change?
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. Oh, that's interesting.
Like a Foshy thing.
Oh, you know me, and Fosh is the best. Fosh is the most underrated changeup. This is something I've said actually for a long time of like, people think that you can do a circle change or do a splitter. There isn't. There's this one in the middle. And I was always someone that did not want to throw my ring finger. If you always wonder like, why can't they throw like a circle change? This is what I've always thought.
Ring finger is super weak.
It is. Exactly. And I was someone who always wanted to pitch with my index finger. And by making a circle change, you're essentially making your middle and your ring the two things. And just felt weird having the ball come off my ring finger. Mm-hmm. I never liked that. So I never really got into a circle change. I would throw it a couple times. I'm like, yay, I did it. Great. Never felt good about it. And then I learned in college how to do a Fosh. And if you don't know what a Fosh is, it's in between like a two-seamer and a splitter. It's just like not fully down your fingers towards like the webbing between your index and your middle. But it's enough that it's elevated off. It's like between your first knuckles. Like at the top. That's essentially how I would say a Fosh goes. It's not much at all. Maybe have it a little bit in the padding on the bottom of your fingers, but it's just a little bit tighter. And that thing moved a ton for me. That was just like a surprising thing. It works for some, doesn't for others. That's pretty cool. That's a Fosh though from Sale.
I did some research for today's show.
Oh, did you?
Yes. An actual spreadsheet sits in front of me.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're going to get to that. I do want to hit back on the original point of Gasser, Robert Gasser, this guy. He got kind of overblown because of Skeens. What was your take on this? It was 6 innings of 0 runs. He had a really impressive debut.
Yeah, I really like him. I went and spent some money to get him over the weekend. I think the upside and downside is most captured by this. I think he is maybe a left-handed Michael King.
Oh.
And the reason I say that is his sinker is his best fastball. Mm-hmm. And his slider is his best breaking ball. And I'm hoping he can do just enough with the fastball, the four-seam fastball and the change to make it work against righties. I think he's going to be more dominant against lefties because if you think about that sinker slider, he's sinker slider at his heart. The thing that is really interesting, though, is that on Fangraphs, he got a 60 future grade on his cutter. And
we don't have a
system that I saw said he threw one.
We don't have that. We just have 46% sweeper, 27% four seamer, 23%
so
sinker,
is it hiding in the sweeper or fastball?
I don't know. I mean, it might be this. It might be the four seamer because it has 11th percentile IVB, and yeah, it might be considering like a gyro cutter.
Okay, so maybe the four seam that wouldn't change the stuff grade for us because four seams and cutters are both fastballs in Stuff Plus right now.
Right.
So,
right.
If that is the case, maybe, and this would be interesting to do in the future, is to kind of, I know teams do this, in fact, is to limit the Stuff Plus to one handedness, split a pitcher in two, basically.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I think if you did that, maybe you could say, oh, this cutting four seam fastball that he has, right? Mm-hmm. Am I right to say that it doesn't have much horizontal movement?
Horizontal movement on the four seamer is 59th percentile.
Okay, so it's not cut ride or anything.
Yeah.
But you know, let's say it was cut ride, then maybe it has an overall grade that's okay. Mm-hmm. But then if you sort of split them in two, you go, oh look, against righties, this four seam changeup package will work, and against lefties, the sinker slider package will work.
Yeah,
but so, I would say the thing that makes me a little bit nervous is that his best fastball is a sinker.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I agree with it.
Yeah.
So with Gasser, I think his best quality of his four seamer is he has 95th percentile height adjusted VAA,
despite having like poor IVB.
He has poor IVB. It's very flat. Like it's what we normally see. It's like you have a more side lower arm angle, which but you're not getting on top of the ball, but seeing a 1.6, I was like, whoa, that is not like Michael King. Michael King has a 0.8, like he's steep, as opposed to the flatness of Gasser. And
yeah, it's not so much based on release and the stuff. It's more like the package. It's
sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sinker slider forcing change, you know?
Right. Yeah. Gasser's interesting because I feel like he's a better commanded version of like the Minaya Heaney type.
Oh,
I think like he actually has less of that cross body action because he does kind of keep a tighter delivery and flatness. Like the arm isn't as wide as the others, right? But it keeps it very flat.
But the one weird thing about that grouping, the Haney Minaya grouping, is that kind of Kyle Harrison grouping is that they don't. They don't have good secondaries.
Right. Heaney sometimes ish, but yeah, this is sweeper. Yeah,
Heaney kind of like drifts in and out.
Yeah. Right. I mean, he's actually doing something crazy with the Blake Snell blueprint right now. It's awesome. With Andrew Heaney. But this is a better HAVAA, for Gasser
has a really good breaking ball. I mean, that's part of why I bid on him too, is like,
I like to see
really good breaking balls.
Right.
I mean, there's very few players that have really good fastballs and really good breaking balls.
Yeah.
You know, and when you do, they're like, you know, usually have a grade A stamp of approval from every prospect person. And you know, you have to spend a lot to get them. Gasser is like somebody that has inspired a little bit of division among evaluators. So,
yeah. Well, it's so interesting because normally, like, you think, oh, cool, this is like Nick Lodolo, right? Because it's a big, big breaker and then the fastball. Well, thing is, like, Lodolo is that sidewinder, so he gets a ton of horizontal movement on the fastball, which kind of prevents it from being, I think, a good pairing because it's just all east-west movement. While, yes, Gasser doesn't have IVB, but because it's flat, it does allow him, I think, to be a little more successful upstairs. And then having the sweeper off of that could be just like a full on high location stuff. So you could even argue that the biggest thing, like if Gasser is able to figure out a changeup that actually works and really goes vertical, right? And really just
It's not a finished product. I
mean, it isn't at all.
Which is weird because he's striking out like 30% of the guys he sees in the minors,
right.
But you know, maybe that's just a good breaking ball, you know.
And well, that's good against lefties. And I think honestly, having a flat four seamer helps him more than say like Lodolo, Heaney, Minaya against right-handers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. just being able to elevate it and be like, cool, like this is still harder for you to hit than the other ones that don't have IVB either, but they have the horizontal break, but that's not really, you know, like think about sinkers to lefties as a righty. It's like, yeah, no. So Gasser is interesting. He also gets two good starts ahead. I'm in on that as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. That was a big part of it too.
Like sometimes are next. Yeah.
I've been trying to like, you know, channel my inner Nick Pollock and, you know, so when I was looking at potential pickups, the way I thought about it a little bit was that, like, you know, a streamer for me, if you have $1,000 free agent budget, if you spend like $20 or $30 on a streamer every week,
right,
then over the course of the season, you're spending like $500. Like you're spending way too much money on a streaming spot.
Right. You know? So you have to.
So streamers should be sort of $7 to $11 out of $1,000.
Yeah. Right.
That sort of makes sense. Mm-hmm. But when I saw his upcoming schedule, I was like, okay, so let's say he's worth $11 as a streamer this week against Pittsburgh.
Right.
And then maybe he's worth another $11 next week. I forget who's the matchup.
It's the Cardinals.
Cardinals. Again. Okay, I'll take that. So let's say that those are two good streaming matchups. That's $20. Now I'm up to $20. Right. Now there's a certain percentage that we learn a little bit more about him. Maybe there is a cutter, you know, like,
right.
You know, we learn a little bit more about how this fastball plays.
Right.
And over the next two starts, he solidifies himself as a full-time pickup.
Yeah, right, right.
And that full-time pickup is worth like $100.
Right. And this is something, first of all, I'm touched that you call this like channeling your inner Nick Pollock. Oh my gosh, you know, that's what I often say about streaming is like, you don't want to stream. Like the whole goal of streaming is to stop streaming.
Yeah, to find somebody.
Right. So the best ones to go for are the ones that you have a good floor in this situation. Like, hey, this is a good start to have that also could show you something that means that they are sticking on your team. Great example, Reese Olson last night against the Marlins and Casey Mize today. I'm recording this on Wednesday against the Marlins. Like, that's great. And by the way, it's not against the Cardinals next for Gasser after the Pirates. It's actually the Marlins, which is just, yes.
Oh, right.
And that's still amazing. But that's always the mentality that it should be. And I really don't like doing the, all right, fine. I guess I'll go for this one guy for this one thing and move on. I try as much as I can to go for the ones that have a good enough floor in this one, but also could be moving in that direction. Thing like Mitchell Parker, if he gets the Marlins again, I'm like, maybe he showcases that he's a four pitch mix and has the kitchen sink and stuff. And actually a good transition, cause I didn't plan on talking about this guy, but I have to bring him up with you, you know, is Joe Ross. Joe Ross had 21 whiffs yesterday. He is doing the Blake Snell blueprint. Four seamers are upstairs. Sliders are downstairs. Change-ups are around. And guess what he's doing with the sinker? They're high, Eno. They're upstairs. It's your favorite thing.
High sinker, yay.
And he gets Miami next. Like, this is the most excited I've been about Joe Ross since 2015.
Well, let me balance that with not being excited.
No! Go. What is it?
I don't know. Maybe it's some sort of deep rooted leftover stuff from his brother, but the mechanics leave me cold a little bit.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And you know, I at their heart, I kind of and maybe this is just leftover from his brother because his stuff plus on his curveball is above average, but I think of them as two pitch pitchers.
Yep. I'm with you. The only thing is that the four seamer actually was like effective upstairs yesterday, and the changeup wasn't bad either. It was like I thought of him as just a worse Brady Singer,
being
Singer slider, and then all of a sudden he's doing this and he gets 21 whiffs and like 38% CSW. And I go, whoa, okay.
I am interested in the fact also that he's at his peak velo, which is
oh, is that right too? See, I mean,
yeah.
Look, it's the Marlins. This is what I'm talking about of like, just try it against the Marlins after going 21 whiffs, see if this sticks around and it can't
but, be. But you know, like you got to look over at the K-minus BB too and it's mediocre.
Right. But I'm wondering if there's something that changed because he was just sinker slider.
Yeah.
Right. And then he did just, you know, here's this whole package of four pitches that are well spotted and I go, huh.
Yeah, even in the last four starts, it wasn't even the first four starts. So the last four starts, he's really increased his forcing fastball and changeup usage.
Mm.
So let's look at his K-minus BB over his last four starts. So that's 427.
I'm just going to, you're probably not, but I'm just going to assume that you're using the pitchless player page because we have all of this stuff and more. for it's individual pitch data. It's not
much better. His KMSBB over the last four starts is 19 minus 7.
That's not that good. Still, I'm taking a chance there against the Marlins.
One last thing, I guess, kind of interesting. While we were talking, I was on Alex Chamberlain's page just picked up Kyle Harrison versus Robert Gasser's four seam as a comparison.
Yeah.
Exactly the same extension.
Uh-huh.
Almost exactly the same spin rate. Almost exactly the same velocity. Almost exactly the same spin axis.
Yeah.
Almost exactly the same vertical release point. Uh-huh. Almost, no, actually exactly the same extension, vertical release point, and horizontal release point.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So those things are exactly, it's being released at exactly the same place in space.
Uh-huh.
The spin axis is 1030 versus 1010.
Mm-hmm.
The spin rate is 2200 versus 217. So these, and the velocity is 928 for Kyle Harrison, 927 for Robert Gasser. Like, so far you're like, oh my God, these guys are the exact same person.
Right.
Now I get to IVB. Kyle Harrison, 11 with a 14 horizontal. So he's
We have it at 10.3. Yeah.
He has a two plane kind of thing, right?
It's dropping and ride. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Robert, I guess that's like maybe it's a traditional sinker being called a four seam, really.
Right. By the way, can I just establish really quickly? For me, ride is horizontal, rise is vertical. I know ride can be both.
Oh,
and it drives me.
Ride and rise is vertical, but horizontal for me is cut and run.
Run. Interesting.
But anyway, vertical, the IVB is 11.4 for Kyle Harrison, 13.1 for Robert Gasser. And then the horizontal is 14 inches for Kyle Harrison, 8 for Robert Gasser. Because I think Gasser, since he has two fastballs, is really trying to differentiate. And the one place that he can differentiate easiest maybe is the horizontal. In any case, it leads to some real differences in all the VAA and HAA stuff.
That's a big difference. 95th percentile for Gasser and 77th for Kyle Harrison.
In what?
Height adjusted VAA.
Yeah. So if I was Kyle Harrison, I might watch some Robert Gasser video. I don't know. Although, you know, if you are Kyle Harrison, telling him, here's this other guy who has one start in the big leagues, you should watch his video, would probably be insulting. So, maybe just his pitching coach should watch some Robert Gasser video. And then,
oh my gosh.
I think I prefer Gasser's fastball profile.
I do too. And I also very much prefer his sweeper. And I also believe a little bit more in Gasser's command.
I just talked to Kyle Harrison about his curveball, which has become more movie.
Is that movie?
Has more movement. That's the worst.
I mean, it has a little bit more spunk to it.
Moviness. You know? But it's moving more horizontally and vertically, so it's like more of a slurve and less of, he was trying to kill the horizontal on it. There's something missing for Harrison, and he's searching for it. He's trying to throw the hard slider and stuff like that. And Gasser seems like almost closer to a finished product than Kyle Harrison. So
yeah, I'd actually agree with that. Also, with Kyle Harrison, what's interesting to me is that all of his fastballs it's all arm side.
Mm.
When I see that,
I mean, at least he can come in on righties, right?
Right. He can't really do that. I think also that speaks to a guy not finishing his pitches. And talking to Tyone, he was really in on, when I throw that sweeper, I need to focus on my index finger being on the other side of the ball. As like, I need to get out and around the thing as opposed to releasing behind it. Right. And it's just like a mental thing. But that helps him really get the.
I think you'll see that in the extension or something. 6.7.
Well, right, the extension side. This is Hunter Brown. He's not doing the extension side, right? Kyle Harrison.
Yes, but 6.7 is pretty good, right? Or no, I guess it's
6.7. What was it? Extension. You're saying? Oh no, all I'm saying is that he's releasing the ball sooner.
Right. So I would think you'd see that in the extension, but maybe, I mean, 6.7 is just there.
Maybe it could be 6.9.
Yeah. Right. Like, because what's so, like like 7.5 or something.
Right? Oh my God, it's insane. It was 7.7 yesterday, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But right. So Kyle Harrison, maybe if he gets the mentality of going glove side now, that actually allows him to get that spin he wants on maybe a slider more.
Oh, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah. Okay.
He said he needed to kind of stick through the curveball more and right. like, you know, finish it off. He was talking about like kind of like at the end, like staying with it longer.
That's great. That's exactly it. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm not just a guy in an armchair, everyone.
Yeah. No, I'm just well, I mean, right. So I mean, maybe this work on the curveball will make the fastball better if he's
right. It's, I mean, does that more. When you're catching and you see the pitcher lose their slider for a pitch or two, you always call a fastball, get the release point back, and then you go back to the slider, right?
Oh, that's funny. My training with my kid. We do 25. He has to throw 25 strikes, and he has to do it before he throws 50 pitches on all four seams.
Yeah,
and then we go into curveball practice, which is fastball, curveball, curveball, fastball, curveball, curveball, fastball, curveball.
There you
curveball.
Go. Nice. So yeah.
I want him to get the back-to-back curveballs to like get feel and have the ability to like kind of adjust a little bit.
Right.
But then I want to throw that fastball in there so he doesn't lose the fastball release point.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a constant thing of like, okay, you need to reset this. So, so then sometimes you throw something that forces you to do something different, like a changeup you have to get out in front of, right? You have to turn it over is what we would call it, right?
Right.
So you got to do that. And that means that you're not doing that on your fastball, getting it down or slider, getting it down or something. You would do that first, right? Yeah, so maybe the fastball, maybe try just overextend glove side a couple, you know, for a start or two and see how that impacts the other things too.
Tango had an interesting picture out where he showed a pitcher and he showed like times to the plate, basically. So he showed like,
oh yeah, right. You know, yes. I love this.
You know, if the fastball's here, he's 94 and he's at the plate, you know, where are the other pitches when the fastball would hit the plate?
Right.
And what was interesting was that the splitter was closer to the plate than the changeup.
No, the cutter.
Than the cutter. Yeah, the splitter was closer to the plate than the cutter, even though the splitter was slower.
Right.
And that was because he had to, for the cutter, you have to cut it off or something. Right.
You have to, like, you need to, you release it sooner.
You release it sooner.
And the splitter is like the last moment you get out there, right? As Eno just puts his two fingers into the camera and terrifies me. I did not expect that. can't wait till we're streaming in 3D. But, it's that's such a great point of like I so remember of like my splitter I need to stay on top of my two fingers and get out as far as I could to really make that one work, while a cutter you are supinating, right? You are coming to the side of it and you're releasing it earlier, and that's such a good graphic. And that's a fun exercise. I'm just like, right, this is how this stuff works. Super cool. I have my other guy that I want to talk about, but I got to give you an opportunity to do, you know, the research, showcase the research that you have here. We're going to talk about that after this break. So, Eno, you prepared something.
I did.
I'm excited for this. What we got?
All right. So, we're going to have to talk about hitters here for a second. Sorry. What?
Swing stuff. It's got to be swing. Yeah, it's got to be swing speed and everything.
That speed stuff came out.
Yep.
And, of course, at some point I flipped over to the pitcher's side. You know, one of the guys, the guy that inspires the slowest bat speed in the big leagues is Robert Suarez.
Oh,
batters only swing 69.6 miles per hour on him on average. The average across baseball is 72. And that's really, I think, fascinating because it's at first glance goes against what you would expect. I think you would expect. So another person on the list of slowest bat speeds is Ryan Yarbrough. And I think, you know, I talked to him and he's like, yeah, you know, that's my game. I'm, you know, first of all, I don't throw hard, so they're probably not swinging that hard. And then second of all, I throw a lot of pitches and I'm trying to keep them off balance and, you know, everything moves, right? That's kind of the person I would think would inspire slow bat speed, because if you look at bat speed per count, the slowest bat speeds are like two strike counts.
Yep.
So I basically think if you're up against Ryan Yarbrough, on some level, you're doing the two strike approach, because it's just all
more, it's all more movie, more slowy.
Yeah, exactly. We're really erudite on the pod today. It movie slowy. So the fact that Robert Suarez and Ryan Yarbrough share spots in the top 10 in this stat made me think a lot. And so one of the real shortcomings of the data that came out, and I hate to talk about it in that framework because it's so much fun to get stuff like this. And
yes.
We've been asking forever. And I hate to be like, well, that's nice. And now I'm asking for more. Right. But the thing is, a lot of the numbers are context dependent in that bat speed and swing length are measured at contact. So right. Now you have right. This point in space that they're not giving us. And without that, we don't know. And it's really important because a contact point out in front of the plate allows you more time to get up to full speed. The bat has more speed. And also changes the length of your swing.
Yep.
And so if you look at the fastest bats, they have also the longest swing length. It's not exactly. My favorite bats have fast swing length and shorter bat lengths, swing lengths.
Yeah.
But there's a definite agreement there. And probably the difference between getting it out in front and like pulling a ball and letting it travel is probably 6 to 8 inches. And that can be significant when you're talking about Giancarlo Stanton's 8 foot swing length right, versus right. somebody else's 7.6. You're like, oh, that's maybe their contact points are different. So anyway, when I started thinking about that, I was like, oh, these pitchers are inspiring different contact points. And so when I looked at, I wanted to look at a bunch of stuff. And so my first idea was ahead in the count. Mm-hmm. These guys are inspiring two strike approaches. They're inspiring people to fight it off, which is a shorter, quicker swing.
Yeah.
Well, this group, the top 20, have ahead in the count 30.6% of the time. League average is 29.4.
Yeah.
It's an effect, but it's, you know, I don't think that's it. There's an aha moment at the end.
Can I make a guess? I'm curious where your conclusion is, but can I put in my guess?
I'll let you do it before the last one.
Good. That's what I want.
I'll help you eliminate some. So I looked at Stuff Plus, overall Stuff uh-huh. Plus, the group 103, league average 100.
Mm-hmm.
Something there, maybe. Fastball Stuff Plus. I thought, oh, maybe these guys are just fighting off the fastball. That's kind of the Suarez thing. The group average is 94, league average is 95. So not that. In fact, there are people on this that don't have good fastballs. Suarez is there. Luke Weaver's on there. Justin Verlander's on there. But Tyler Kinley is in this list. Hunter Strickland. Michael Kelly. Aaron Civale. Aaron Civale does not have a good fastball.
Yeah, right.
So then I say, oh, it's breaking ball Stuff Plus. And there might be something here. I got a 123 breaking ball Stuff Plus in the group. 114 for league average. So maybe they're fighting off breaking balls. You'd have a quicker, slower swing for a breaking ball. In fact, I saw that curveballs and sliders have some of the slowest swing speeds among the different pitches. Mm-hmm. But then I got to the last stat, and I thought this one was the biggest one.
So I would say this is actually from a Kyle Bland tweet. Him talking about location of pitches.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, all right, so probably something away is going to be let the ball travel.
No, it's your favorite. It's high.
But it's upstairs is really what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. It's just like, I'm just thinking about Ryan Yarbrough being like, I can understand it being slow away. And then you just
I didn't actually look at like up and in or.
Yeah. You know, right. It's high lock. It's like, so you have to have a shorter swing going upstairs than you do down. You made the point of like shorter swing goes less.
37.4% high lock. And this is why I texted you. High locked all pitches. So I didn't break it down to just fastballs. Maybe it's even more.
Well, the cutter of Aaron Civale.
Right. So I didn't. This is actually better this way. It's like you might throw all sorts of different pitches up there. You might throw high sinkers, you know. So the high lock for all pitches for this group is 37.4. League average is 31.5.
Right.
So I think that's kind of it. What's interesting last bit is that the K minus BB of this group is 14.2, league average 13.7. So I don't even know if this group is good. I mean, you know, for every Robert Suarez and Luke Weaver and Joe Ryan is on here, there's also Joe Boyle and, like I said, Tyler Kinley and Hunter Strickland. So it's not the best group of pitchers. And the last bit is, okay, so high in the zone, you know, your swing speed is lower because you're just trying to have a short swing to get there. Why are homers high in the zone if you have less bat speed on those? Because the launch angles are better, right? So all of these things are super complicated. It's just the crappy answer is that we're in day three of these stats and we are going to have to figure it out over time. And there's going to be more context that we need. And once we start breaking it up into context, I think we'll do better. Because if you think about even average swing speed, Isak Paredes has three humps on his distribution of swing speeds. Mm-hmm. He has three different swings, A, B, and C swings. Mm-hmm. And so to say that his average swing speed is one thing is a lot different than sort of saying what his A swing looks like. And
should we
figure out a way to compare people's A swings if we want to really
Absolutely, we should. And I'm looking forward to the next wave of pitcherless stats that utilize this.
Well, one thing that I like already that Kyle did was combining swing length and swing speed to get kind of a swing acceleration number.
Yeah. I think that was cool. That was really cool. Yeah. Kyle's so good. My thoughts, I just kind of had a little bit of a maybe enlightenment. I don't know. So first and foremost, I kind of consider, I have like my fantastic four is what I call it. The four elements of a fat four seamer that like make it whiffable. And I actually am starting to bucket them into two groups. You have your IVB really, which is like your movement part of it. Mm-hmm. Like that's really the wear factor. Like, let's just say they're all high fastballs, right? Mm-hmm. High fastballs, cool. IVB makes it harder to hit. So that's like the wear is the tough part. But then really extension, velocity, and VAA is the when. Because why VAA works is you just shorten the amount of time you can make contact with the ball, right? Because you just make it,
it's moving. It's like the bat.
You're essentially the best version of it is perpendicular. So that means it's just one point of intersection.
Yeah.
And then the more that you get closer to being parallel, that means essentially the entire time of the bat path is going to make contact, right? That's what VAA is all about. So to me, that's just timing of like along the bat path. At this point, you have to be here, which is really what velocity and extension are about too. Like you need to be here at this time, right? That the latter two are more about reaction, but also I think it all just is in timing to me. Mm-hmm. So thinking of it like that, and then you wonder about, I think with the swing speed stuff, what's the biggest thing? It's like, right, you swing harder, and the pitch is harder the farther it goes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty obvious. We know this of like home run derby, 50 mile per hour pitches versus 100. I think there's something about the max exit velocity being 130 if it's at 100 miles per hour thrown, while it's lower if it's at 50 miles per hour thrown, right?
It's still four fifths bat speed, one fifth incoming speed, but it's still one fifth incoming speed.
Right. So then I started thinking, well, hold on. What if what we're seeing from the swing speed, you're saying that also throwing upstairs limits swing speed, thus exit velocities will be lower.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the other element that lowers exit velocities? Velocity.
Mm.
Shota Imanaga is throwing 91 and not 100.
Right.
Right.
And but he does everything else well.
But he has incredible IVB. He has incredible flatness. He has incredible extension, right? Like, hold on. Well, I mean, actually, extension. Yeah, extension is better than velocity, I would argue, because it's not coming in as hard to be hit out harder, but has the same effect on reaction, right? So, So, like if you have that, right? So, Joe Ryan. Is that thing too? And I'm just thinking to myself, like, wait a second, is this like the new way of preventing pitching injuries? We say you don't want to throw harder,
just throw higher.
You just got to throw higher with better IVB and flatness, guys. Like that's what you do. I think
IVB is one of the hardest things to coach. The
impact is minimal.
Have you watched Luke Weaver? Do you know why Luke Weaver got 2 inches of ride? Like,
no idea. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's rare,
right? How often you look somebody up and they're like, whoa, plus 2 inches of ride.
Yeah. I mean, Hunter Green did it, right? And then all of a sudden he lost it and then he got back one of them.
Yeah.
it happens. I mean, Jordan Wicks just did that too. But I mean, once a drive line, all that stuff. But I mean, that's just kind of where my instinct goes, like, huh, maybe there's, I'm probably over amplifying the effect of the velocity in to velocity out. It's just a kind of a quick thought of like, and especially also you're limiting the swing speed. So maybe there is something to that, and the fear of home runs. I don't know. I mean, like, Shota doesn't have home runs yet.
I know, that's what's so weird. I will say that, like, the low and in thing that you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Is borne out by this new research.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that doesn't surprise
me. Speeds are the highest low and in.
And also, what's interesting is that inside is like the contact point needs to be. You have two contact points inside is the thing. You have one that's off the handle, and you have one that's off the barrel. And what I mean by that is, if you're late on the inside one, it's like at what point of the swing? So, like, let's say you have the bat is out in front of the batter, kind of like parallel to the or perpendicular to the catcher, so right, just cross the plate into the next batter's box.
Mm-hmm.
Going negative degrees, you know, so towards the catcher, is one place of contact where the handle is essentially, and then going towards the pitcher is where the barrel is. Right.
Yeah.
So like in the full thing of the 180 degrees of the swing. Right. So that's a 90. So you could say like, well, yeah, he gets a max swing speed because he hits at the barrel to get out in front of it and drive it down the line. That's your pull fly ball.
Right.
But your non pull fly ball inside is at the handle, you know, and that's
the broken bat.
Right. So that's interesting. Like inside, I'm like, oh, maybe some inside guys will actually maybe not like those that throw like inside slow. Would have like the highest allowed bat speed, but inside fast, like the 100
mile. Ryan Barbaros throws inside slow.
Does he?
And then, you know, one of the last bits on this that I've got is since I talked to you, Ryan Yarbrough, we talked about how he's throwing his sinker more to righties, and he's throwing it belt high away.
What? Don't do that.
It's working. I mean, nobody's hitting it. I don't know if it's like one of those short-term working, like it's just working because people are like, what's that?
Right. That's what, I mean, Robbie Ray did that. Like he all of a sudden had the sinker, but instead of sinker like to lefties, it was just middle away to righties. I'm like, how is that working?
Maybe it is something you just don't see that often.
Yeah. Of like the four-seamer too, you establish that one and then all of a sudden it's just, what? What are you
I was hoping here? To say like these are wide arsenal guys, but there's a lot of relievers on here.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, it's got to be high. Yeah, it's high stuff. And like, look,
but there's this interesting relationship. You look at the heat maps that are out there of like, you know, swing speed is short at the top and long at the bottom, and swing speed is slow at the top and long at the bottom, and I'm messing up my swing speed and saying like,
you got this.
Swing speed is short at the top and high at the bottom, and swing length is short at the top and long at the bottom.
Right.
And I still think, I mean, some of the stuff is we're just feeling it out and figuring, and we're bringing our own biases to the table. But I still think one of the reasons why middle is such a good place for hitters is because that's where you get this convergence of swing speed and swing length. It's not your longest swing, but it is one of your, yeah, it's like that part where the swing speed and swing length are at their perfect.
That's interesting. Yeah. Ratio. I mean, I've also thought of it as like, for some guys, it's not necessarily middle that they want. We say, where do you want the ball? It's not always exactly there. It's like, maybe it's like slightly up and in, or maybe it's like right over here. Right. And to me, that's always just, what is the swing of the bat that you don't need to angle? Mm. You don't need to adjust from just your normal, like, all right, give me a bat.
There are batters who aren't that great middle. I think Mookie Betts for a while had like a weird blue spot middle.
That's so strange. Because he's probably just always like keyed into something that's not middle or something that shows up there. It's
right.
Like,
oh. Probably you know? Doesn't see that much middle.
And those who have played MLB The Show, when you get a middle pitch, you're like, what? You know, you don't know what to do with it.
I have a good transition here because we're talking about command and how that has to do with reducing bat speed. But it'll come right after this. So the other name I have right now is it's unfortunately not on this list. He doesn't give up really bad bat speed, but he does not have good command.
Okay.
Is there any hope for Jack Leiter? I watched.
Just kidding, yes, there is. There is.
I watched his last start against Cleveland, and I was expecting Joe Boyle.
He's not Joe Boyle.
I was expecting fastballs in the waist, and maybe he's actually almost the anti Joe Boyle in that his fastball command, I thought, looked fine.
Right. He was dotting generally it upstairs.
On the top, generally upstairs. He sometimes was dotting it. Like he was, you know, he hit inside corner, and I thought the fastball command was really good. And in general, you know, a lot of his movement and a lot of his, I'm not a mechanics guru, but I, you know, I have talked to some people in the Rangers organization about what the work was with him. And it was about sort of, you know, keeping him closed longer and getting him to, you know, getting all its energy towards the plate as opposed to rotational. And it felt that way. It felt like his energy is towards the plate. It didn't feel like he was super sideways. It felt like, you know, at least the fastball, it was all doable. It's breaking ball command that really struggled. I think he hit people with the breaking ball.
He hit people with the fastball first at bat.
He did. But that one, it wasn't like waist zone. It was just like one of those ones where it hit the pad. The guy,
sure. I mean, it was up and in. It wasn't great.
It wasn't like the biggest miss.
Right.
I would say generally, I would give him a B on fastball command. You know.
Yeah.
B plus even.
Right.
And the breaking balls, it was just really consistency on the breaking balls. There were some breaking balls that were right on the black, and the shape of the breaking balls is good. And he's got three of them. I mean, he's got the cutter, the slider, and the curve. I think he can be one of these three breaking ball pitchers. The command of the cutter was like maybe an F. That was one where every time he tried to throw the cutter, it was like way in. Off the plate. He almost hit somebody in the head with a cutter.
Oh yeah, that's a nailer.
That's
funny. I'm watching this really quickly right now, and literally as you said that, the ball went into Naylor's head.
Yeah. The slider, the curve, he bounced, didn't make it to the plate a few times. And then the slider was the closest to good. The slider was like, I would give the slider like a C, the curve like a D, and the cutter an F in terms of command.
So what I'm seeing with this is a Guardians team that are just like, throw your stuff for a strike, and we're just going to key in on a fastball upstairs.
They're reasonably patient, and they're good at
right.
Oh, and the other thing that they did that the announcers really keyed on was they fouled a lot of pitches off.
Yes,
and I think like maybe they have the plus hit tool. So
sure,
you know, it was like what happens when plus stuff hits plus hit tool,
right?
Probably a lot of foul balls.
Yeah. So foul balls to me, this is my assessment of foul balls as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Generally a pitch is going to do one of two things. It's going to earn a whiff or it's going to be in play on a swing, right? That's the way I see it. It's just going to be one of the two. And there's one that is the majority versus the other, right? There's one that is swung when one is an expectation on a swing. Foul balls steal from that one. So on a night where a guy allows a lot of foul balls, it's either preventing the balls in play or it's preventing whiffs, depending on the pitcher. So I think with lighter, those aren't balls in play that they're stealing. I think those are whiffs that they're stealing.
Yes.
It's more of a whiff.
Especially they found off a lot of high fastballs.
Right. And but you also see these starts from guys. Fastballs.
They were like, they could have even been called strikes, some of them.
Yeah, and
they,
right. Yeah.
So...
There are guys that also go like deeper into games, have these weird like strikeout games. It's because they're fouling off balls that would normally be in play.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows the count to go deeper, then all of a sudden they can strike them out, right? While other times it takes away from it.
Is that like the difference between fighting it off and just missing it?
Yeah.
Like, there are foul balls that are fighting it off. They weren't really going to put those in play. They were fighting them off.
Right.
That's what it felt like to me. I was like, when I knew the outcome while I was watching it, and was just like, I was like trying to pick up on clues that it was going to get there. And I was like, okay, 30 pitches in the first, you know, I guess it's the command that's going to get him. I think it was on some level, a bad matchup for him.
I think,
you know, it would have been nicer for him to land with just an easier, a team that whiffs more. I don't know that what that means for him going forward, though, because, you know, breaking ball command is really important in this league. And
oh, completely.
In some ways, I'd almost prefer the Joe Boyle thing, where it's like, well, at least he can command his breaking ball. Much better is if he can command. I found that if you look at breakouts, like young breakouts, they command one hard pitch at least. The only one who can't is Ashby. So like, I think one is like a okay amount, but two is always better, being able to command two pitches.
Right. So yeah, my takeaway here, I remember watching the first one against the Tigers. That's Jack Leiter's debut. And even in that one, I was like, oh man, he's so close. And he made some really bad pitches, like some bad decisions of like Javier Baez, man on second. The rule of thumb, guys, is when the first pitch that you throw with a man on second should not be a fastball. Why? Pablo Lopez said it best. They just want the momentum to continue. They want a next guy up.
They want the RBI.
They want it in, right? They're going to be aggressive on this. So you don't give them a fastball. Two, you don't throw a fastball to Javier Baez. Three, you don't throw one down the middle, like slightly in and like a little bit down. Like that's what he did. And Baez was just like, oh man, I'm back. You're like, no, you're not, Baez. Like that was just so stupid, you know? Like, come on.
Did you see where the target was? Was it?
Oh yeah, it was there. It was.
Oh
there.
No!
It was like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to go inside with a fastball now against Javier Baez? Like, what are you doing? Why? Why? So, I mean, there was a little bit of that in that one. I'm also looking at the mechanics a little bit better. And by the way, I know some people don't like the Texas camera angle. I personally do, because you can actually see depth better on like the front end, and I feel like that's something we miss a ton. We just see in the dirt. We don't really know if it's in front of the plate, behind the plate, or so. And actually seeing that is really cool thing.
A little bit higher, a bit behind.
Yeah, they're high and up a bit. I would maybe prefer a little bit lower, but like, you know, it's still great. So with Leiter, what's so interesting about guys that are ultra twisted before delivery, he's not cross step. He is landing straight. However, starting closed so much does create the similar effect of cross body a bit.
Interesting.
Because you still need to twist it open. And that is, I think that is why you see that weird.
Well, it does it for D'Lo though, right? Because he's trying
to. It does. The torque of the. That's, you know, a lot of guys are like that with the pelvic stuff and everything. Yeah. Absolutely. But I have seen this where that does mean that East West is a problem. And that's
what he East West is definitely still a problem for him. That's why the breaking ball command is not as good as the fastball command.
Right.
Because fastball, he's just going up and down. And the breaking ball has more of a sideways component.
He had two guys on both sides of the plate trying to go inside with the fastball in this one. He's far on the right side of the plate, which means that it's harder to get the slider and the cutter and the curve on the glove side of the plate.
And that's where his command is the worst of those breaking.
Exactly. Balls. So these are elements that like make sense. Honestly, I think Jack Leiter would be a guy that would benefit a ton from not being on the right side of the plate of the mound.
The rubber, yeah.
He would be better on the other, because you want to strain that out. You want to make it so that when you're twisted, when you miss arm side like this, that's still a strike, you know?
You want to make it so you can aim his breaking ball middle.
Right. You can make it more less of an angle for that from.
Yeah.
And the fastball, I think he can keep that straighter. And that's honestly the best part about Jack Leiter, is I trust, unlike Joe Boyle, I trust that his four-seamer, give him more time and limit, just small tweaks, like he can make that more consistent up there. And again, watching this Guardians team, yeah, they're just in on the heater. I mean, he threw a 94 mile per hour upper third, what you generally like for Jack Leiter. That's the RBI good, double right? Off the wall for Josh Naylor, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. So
they didn't do anything with it, although maybe I didn't see where Naylor's homer was. Was it a homer?
Well, that was off the wall. I don't other Naylor, I guess. I haven't gotten there yet.
No, the Naylor off the wall hit.
That was middle upper third of 94.
So they're just keyed in on. If he had better breaking ball command, then he could go more to the cutter and the other pitches.
And how many times have you seen like Mason Miller and Jared Jones throw these sliders, and Hunter Green and Strider throw these sliders well over the plate, and guys just go whoops. You know, and like that's why, because they're all keyed on the slider and the fastball, and that messes them up.
Okay, yeah. Trevor May called the Cody Bellinger homer off of Jared Jones before it happened.
Oh, that's
it
cool.
was so weird because we did a little a segment on our show. It was like, how would you hit Jared Jones?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, if you're a lefty in 0-2 counts, he's throwing you a fastball. And it was, I think he said it was 100% so far this year. And I was like, no, nobody has 100%. Like, yeah. That's bad. You don't have, you can't have 100% anywhere on your thing.
Right.
And I don't know if it was 90 or 100%. It was enough to be like, wow, that's kind of a thing. And
that's what Jared you should Jones lean into.
Fastball loan in to Cody Bellinger.
On low and in?
Yeah. To Cody Bellinger, of all people.
Well, Bellinger's got that golf swing.
Exactly. So that was perfect.
Oh.
Was Homer.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Well, that's interesting stuff in Jack Leiter. I know I said interestingly no, just because it's fun. Be like, right now for fantasy, you don't want to have Jack Leiter. But is he fixable? Yeah.
I don't know. Like the deepest of deepest leagues, you know, where he's just an easy, like just a pickup as a prospect type deal.
Is he going to keep him in the rotation though?
Well, I think they sent him down already, but.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And if they're going 4-man this week because they have an off day on Thursday and Monday next week for the Rangers.
But like, what if he comes up as a streamer and he's got a cake matchup, you know?
Right. I mean,
write him off.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, probably what's really nice now is that we can follow that on Savant and actually get a good understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of young guys, I do want to go back to the initial thing, Paul Skeens. Okay. This was a 2-whip, right? 4 innings. He came out into the fifth and I was surprised about this because I actually ended my stream, my watch party after the fourth, because I was like, oh, he's done. No problem. And it was just horrendous.
How many pitches did he have through four?
It was like 78 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's an MLB debut. I'm like, why would you do this? It's Paul Skeens. It's fine. And then they like pushed them. The interesting thing here that okay. Let me talk out my theory, and I'm just curious what your thoughts are, okay? Paul Skeens is four-seamer, if you want to call it that. It's really like a sinker, but let's just call it a four-seamer for now. It has like 10 IVB, right? But the thing about it is it's flat, and it is also super, super, super hard. So I'm just thinking about how batters swing and where it's good to pitch like that. Because if you have vert, that means you're trying to miss above the bat, right? And you're trying to go up and you're trying to catch up to the ball, but it keeps going higher and higher, which means that your bat is going to be below the ball upstairs if you're late, right? However, if you are flat and you are throwing hard down low and they're late, where is the bat going to be when you miss, when you're too late on it? It's going to be above the ball, isn't it? Right? Like when you're late on a fastball, when you're behind on it, the bat is still going down at that point as opposed to going up upstairs. So Paul Skeens has drop on his four-seamer. Then he wants to throw this low. He would get more whiffs that way at 100. Right? Am I crazy about this?
Because he does throw it low, doesn't he?
Well, right. This is kind of, the whole thing about Paul Skeens like having bad fastball shape and put in air quotes here is because the vert is terrible, right?
Because it doesn't have the shape that we expect from right. what we call four
seams.
And
when we say shape, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just thinking vert, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? I like to include shape with height-adjusted VAA in there too. But generally when you hear shape, I just think, does he have good vert or not? Right. And also like sinker, fine. Is it good horizontal movement too? You've actually turned me on to like 2-plane fastballs a little bit more than before. But for me, it's just always vert. But because it's such an extreme,
guess what his shape is perfectly aligned with?
What his shape is perfectly aligned with? That is like who else has it? Kyle Harrison. Yes, I knew it. Yes. I was going to get to that. Oh, man. I was great because I was thinking, like, who has the lowest vert four seamer? It's Kyle Harrison. Kyle Harrison does it so much slower. That's the point, though. like when you have the elite velocity.
Skeens cuts it off a little bit more though in terms of extension, but
sure.
And
but yeah, isn't that crazy?
He's a little bit further out, but and Harrison releases a little bit lower, but yeah, there's, you know, at least in just shape, it's they're almost exactly the same.
That's so funny. But I'm thinking, just like, if you're throwing that hard and you're trying to lean into being late, you don't actually want to be up on this because you're going to help them. The ball's going to go closer to the late bat upstairs if you have drop.
It's also, isn't it just harder to be late? We were just talking about this with the swing length and swing speed stuff up.
Oh, right. Shorter swing, longer swing. Right.
What you're doing is you're up top. You're doing shorter swings.
Right.
So it's going to be easier to be on time, I guess, in some ways.
Oh man. This is kind of where my head is at. And I actually saw the command of his four seamer. I saw it more low than up, I think. Yeah. And it's one of the first times I'm like, wait a second, you know, I think we found the perfect low fastball. I think we've got it. And it's a little weird that he's flat-ish. Like, you kind of would want this to be not flat, maybe. You want it to be steep, I think.
More just play homes-ish or something?
It's just harder to hit a steeper fastball down, right?
Right.
But maybe flat is good because it's not intersecting. Like, if it's coming from lower, then that means they always need to be lower as opposed to higher. I don't know. I'm trying to think about this in my head about like the ball path and like where
he has less adjusted VAA than Kyle Harrison.
Right.
Because he's releasing it from a higher release point.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I don't know. It's something about like I certainly, I don't think that any model utilizes this, right? I don't think it says like, oh, hey, no, when you throw a four seamer above this velocity, it's better to have drop or not downstairs than it is upstairs, you know?
I mean, I don't know. Theoretically, stuff less could, because those are both.
Because it's just like black box. It doesn't really care, right?
Yeah, it could just pick that up. It does like his four seam. It doesn't say it's one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
It said it was like a 102 and, you know, four seam average is like 95, 96. So, you know, it's above average no matter what. And probably mostly on the velo.
And generally, we're going to hate, PLV is going to absolutely hate pitches in debuts a ton. And you can probably guess why PLV is going to hate it in a debut. Because
they're amped up and they're not as commanded as well.
Right. So how PLV works is it takes every single pitch and assigns a number between 0 and 10. And then we scale that, essentially. Or then we average that out. And that's what your PLV is. Thing is, you're going to have a lot more zeros in your MLB debuts. You're going to have a lot more just bad waste that you just, whoop, never mind. Skeens had a ton of those with his fastball, right? Like, he had many. However, he didn't really throw in the zone up. He threw in the zone down. And that's kind of cool.
This is something that, I don't know if it was Sky Cogman or Eli Ben Portat that was talking about. Should we have, you know, like stuff pluses for certain parts of the look of the zone. Like, should you have like a location adjusted stuff plus? It's a little bit weird to say it that way, because in order to do stuff plus at all, you have to remove location. So you actually have to impute average location. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to say, if I want to remove location value out of this pitch, I have to figure out what the average location is for this type of pitch, and then I have to remove that.
Yeah, right.
So stuff plus is already location adjusted, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to say something like, hey, this pitch has a good high lock stuff plus.
Right. What if you could just input, like, cool, this is location is here, and then location is here. What is the pitching plus relatively? Right.
Yeah. You know, because I can tell you that our model has it as a 101 stuff plus. It loves the velo. And in fact, interestingly enough, it says that, you know, pitches with that amount of ride and that amount of velo, it's in a red bucket. However, I bet you the other pitches in that bucket
are sinkers.
No, our relievers.
Oh, why is that?
Because who else throws 101?
Yoan Duran.
Yes. That was our other comp.
Yeah.
Our other comp for Skeens is Duran.
Yeah.
So
and he also does a splinker. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So he's a starting pitcher, Duran.
And that's what he was originally.
And in fact, I think his splitter moves so similarly to Duran's that it actually got dinged in the first start by the model. The model says 96 stuff plus. It's not terrible. Mm-hmm. But if your best comp is Duran's splitter and Duran's splitter goes 99, then stuff plus is probably be like, yeah, but it's not as good as Duran's.
So, that's pretty funny.
So there is this thing where in certain buckets, you just don't have that much comparison. And I would just say that, you know, the comps for Paul Skeens fastballs are rare.
Yeah, no, absolutely. By the way, the PLV is 412 for Paul Skeens' four seamer in that first start.
Really?
It was just because he had so many zeros. So many zeros pulling down the average.
Yeah.
Right? Because he had all these waste pitches down in glove side.
I mean, how should I even go about find, like, if I was going to find a comp, the first thing I have to do is velo, right? Like, I have to, it has to at least be 90. What does it have to at least be?
Something let's like, see 96, 97.
I find it hard to sort Alex. Okay. So, let's just say, among 98s at least, now, compared to other fastballs among the 98s, his fastball has the least ride other than Andrés Muñoz. Muñoz is his closest comp.
Oh, that's a pretty cool one. Hopefully you can get that slider the same way. I mean, the slider wasn't so bad for Paul Skeens.
The other close-ish comps are Duran. Yeah, Duran is actually really close. Jose Soriano is the only...
Jose Soriano's fun, man. He just has to throw more strikes, but like, he's pretty fun. There is actually one other player I do want to talk about while I've got you here for a second. I've got you for about another 5-10 minutes here, but I got one player that we just got to mention here. And we're going to talk about him after this break. Eno.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Kramer.
He was one of my preseason calls, dude.
This is bonkers to me.
I don't even know why. Like, I was just like, he has a lot of pitches, and
he's it is the Orioles context, right? That's good. It is a guy that is able to go six innings decently often.
Right. But, so he gets some wins.
It's weird. I feel this a little bit as a Vargas role. If you guys don't know what that is, essentially a guy who's performing at his best and is in rhythm, but doesn't really have the full enough arsenal that is believable and sustainable for a full year, but he's in rhythm. That means he's going to be good in this nice little pocket of time. And what we've seen is 30 strikeouts across his last four starts combined, including two games of 10 strikeouts each, which is what? What's weird to me about Dean Kramer is that I've seen across this time, four different pitches take the spotlight. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've seen four seamers get 10 whiffs one day. Cutters dominate the next. Splitters all of a sudden show up and have a field day. And then in his last start, his sinker had six called strikeouts out of his 10.
Oh, I was watching that one. He was front dooring lefties with a sinker.
He was. This is a huge thing for Dean Kramer this year. He only throws 13% sinkers, 35% called strike rate. And what's even crazier to me is he has the 91st percentile two strike rate with a sinker, 34%, at a ridiculous 39% put away rate. And if you don't know put away rate, that says when you throw this pitch in a two strike count, does it result in a strikeout? That pitch singularly. Like a good,
like one of the few pitches in baseball that has like a higher put away rate than whiff rate.
It's unbelievable. It's crazy. Okay. The only ones that are like higher percentiles are like the ones that have been thrown like four times or something. Like, this
the whiff rate is 9%.
Right. It's just called strike threes.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that's sustainable.
Because at some point it goes in the scouting report and people swing at it, right?
Well, people don't think about this thing. It just kind of shows up and they think it's going to be the fastball or the cutter. And all of a sudden, bam, there it is. And he spotted it in that game. Yeah. Like it was nice.
I guess that's the thing is that if command is a little bit flighty, start to start and year to year,
right,
then he's not going to always be able to spot it.
But the I think the real point I want to get your take on is a guy like Dean Kramer, who, you know, I generally like to feel good about a player when it's one thing that is consistent. And that's the thing that's working for him. And usually there's something else as a backup plan that we trust. But really just like, no, every night there it is. That's going to be the thing. With Dean Kramer, we're seeing this kind of almost Taiwan Walker-esque thing of, I don't know what it is going to be tonight. Maybe it's going to be the cutter, the slider, the fastballs, whatever, that are going to get me to the finish line. But there has been something every time. And
it's been different.
But it's different. Is that a benefit to you? Is that something that's like, well, he's got all these options, so that makes me confident that something will be there? Or is it a negative that like you don't feel confident in any of them?
There's a saying, different day, different arm.
Mm.
In some ways, having a lot of different pitches allows you to be like, well, I'm not spotting the front door two seamer today.
Right. The Darvish thing.
That ain't working.
Yeah.
So today I'm going to throw a lot of curveballs. And, you know, I was just looking at his pitch by pitch usage. First four starts, he used the curveball like 20% of the time, 15% of the time. Since then, yeah, he's used it 7% of the time, like half as much.
Right.
But right now, the sinker is, you know, at its peak usage at 20%.
Yeah.
And they're not, the thing is, they're not totally interchangeable, but, you know, they at least offer him another thing he can do. And Stuff Plus is like, this guy's mediocre. Why do you like him?
Well, it's because it's command, right?
Well, another thing is like the fastballs are okay. 95 Stuff Plus on the fastball is actually pretty close to average. Yeah. 84 on the sinker is close to average than people might think. I mean, I think the average sinker is like 92 Stuff Plus. Stuff Plus hates sinkers. 98 on the cutter. So that's another part of what's going on is that he's got three fastballs that go in different directions. And that's something that hitting coaches and pitchers have been telling me like is just kind of a cheat code almost, because you're going to want to keyhole him on velo.
Right.
And if you can't keyhole him on a velo because there's three different movement patterns on that, then even if the splitter is meh and the curveball is eh, like you're so tied up by trying to figure out which fastball he's throwing you.
Right.
Right. I mean, he's definitely just a kitchen sink guy right now. And I think the reason why in my portfolio every year I want to have guys like this is kind of that you have these Dean Kramer outcomes. It doesn't mean that I'd want to trade for Dean Kramer in a keeper league.
Sure.
Or even that Dean Kramer will be that high on my rankings next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the kind of guy that I'm happy to own because I got my shares of you know, kitchen sink guys, and I'm just happy to be with the performance as it is. I just, next year, will he be able to continue front dooring that two seamer? There's very few. How many pitchers can you think of that made a career out of front dooring the two seamer? I think of Corey Kluber immediately.
Hendricks and Nola.
And they have, you know, location numbers that have stuck with them, you know, year to year. And it's nice if you can do that, but not everybody has that. And Dean Kramer's location plus is 102. You know, Nola is consistently 104, 105, 106,
right, like
an order above that. So I would say he's a good pitch. I would say something really sort of damning with faint praise. Like, he's a good little pitcher. He also,
he's a Toby.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, another thing that strikes me, I was like, when I'm watching Dean Kramer, I'm like, he just seems little. And then I was watching Gavin Stone at the park last night.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy's little.
How tall do you think Dean Kramer is?
I just looked it up and I'm like, he's not little.
He's 6'2".
As me.
Yeah.
6'2".
Wow, but I mean, Gavin Stone is 6'1", but 175.
It was the body type. Kramer's listed at 200, but like they're not stocky guys. They're kind of among all like sort of starting pitchers there, or maybe Skeens has just broken my sense of like,
yeah, right. Oh my gosh. Ben Brown.
Yeah.
Oh man. Ben Brown walked past me. There are rare moments in my life that I encounter a human. I'm just like, whoa, like that is not a common thing. Like Josh Bell did that to me. And like, oh man. And then like,
Ben Brown, just because of the beefiness, dude.
I mean, he's a big dude, but Ben Brown, I had to like tilt my head. I'm like, this isn't fair. You know, standing next to Tyone. I'm like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, I spent a lot of time around Sean and Jelly.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. Gosh. Don't even.
He sits down and his legs are like, come up to my waist when they bend.
Oh man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Bailey Ober or something too.
I think that, you know, back to Kramer, just I don't, there's no out pitch.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It does sometimes show up. Like the out pitch sometimes is a sinker in front door. Maybe it's the splitter. He had 17
my definition of
cutters and four seamers in that first 10 strikeout game.
Yeah, but right? My definition of out pitch is like it's always there for you.
Ah, yeah, sure, sure.
It's
he doesn't
and
have
also
that.
My definition of out pitch, like it doesn't have to be really high in stuff plus, but like it's got
to
be.
You
nasty.
Execute this pitch, you know that like you're in a jam, like this is the pitch, and you're gonna get that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. He doesn't have a nasty pitch.
So I do want to say last thing on Dean Kramer is this four seamer is really like is the thing that kind of pushes everything along, because that's always really the problem. Is like sure you have the sinker for two strikes, sure maybe somebody have a splitter, but like how do you get there? How do you get your strikes? And mostly that is four seamer cutter. The cutter is performing super well, 31%
ICR. Yeah,
that's the thing. But this four seamer that he throws more than the cutter, so 33% of the time, 58% ICR this year. That is an atrocity. His fly ball exit velocity is up over 3 miles per hour to about 94.
That's where you get the 1.76 homers per minute.
Exactly. And it used to be around 90, which is still a little bit elevated for exit velocity on fly balls. And to see that is just, that is still going to be a problem for him. So it's nice that the sinker command is there for a moment and that worked. The splitter was there for a moment, but I feel like it's going to be a little bit worrisome with his four seamer throughout the year.
Why is that though? I mean, it has 18 IVB. You know what it is? It's kind of average. You know, like 18 is okay, but then 93.5, everything's like.
He has no extension. 6.2. It's a normal normal high adjusted VA. It's average velocity.
Actually, Chamberlain's. I'm annoyed that your high adjusted VAs aren't the same, but Chamberlain's 0.05, which is like very small.
Mm. So it's like average. Yeah, 47th right? For us.
Yeah.
47th percentile.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll yell at Chamberlain because we got it right.
Well, I actually like his is like 0.05%. I read that as like very close to average. So,
He does it as percentile. I gotcha. Yeah. For me, it's just like one is average and then it goes the other way, one, you know.
But anyway, that extension, yeah, it's got some like the IVB is pretty good, but you know. I can only take you so far if you're cutting it off. And
But that's going to do it for today. You got to get out of here. What are you working on right now? And next week, maybe we do talk about where we are a little bit different on some guys.
Yes, I'm going to release pitcher rankings next week. Maybe I'll try to get it done before our show. At least I'll have the working ranks in front of me and I can share those with you. What else am I doing? I'm going to do some buy low pitchers, I think, for Friday. And if you are interested in reading more about the new bat speed metrics, I had a piece on Monday where I talked to a bunch of different hitting coaches and hitters and tried to parse what we've gotten so far.
Fantastic. Awesome. You know, I'm looking forward to that one. Obviously for me, just come to playback.tv/pitcherlist to hand live stream. And yeah, I'm doing my YouTube videos on pitchers, pitcher breakdowns moving forward now. So definitely go check that out on YouTube. It's really fun. I also have a new video editor, Josh Sperry. So really excited to be working with him and to actually make those videos a little bit more exciting for you guys. I'll be at the All-Star game, you know, this year. I hope to see you there. So with Josh.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm doing it for you.
Is it Dallas?
Yeah. I'm just gonna do the whole experience. Gonna have a fun time. but that's it, guys. That's it for the craft this week. Eno, thank you so much for joining me. That's it for this week. My name is Nick Pollock, and we're gonna talk about the craft again next week.